Imagine heaven. Last week we imagined hell, which wasn't that enjoyable, but was really interesting and important to understand. Throughout this whole series, what we've been doing is hearing people's near-death experiences, people who have died on earth or come close to death on earth and experienced something of the afterlife. And often they've experienced things or seen things even in this world that they would not have been able to see unless they were outside of their body. These stories are baffling doctors and scientists, and lots of research is going on into near-death experiences. So we've been hearing stories, and we'll hear a couple more this morning, and using that as a way to go back then and look at what does the Bible say about heaven, or last week about hell. What should we actually expect? And not just what should we know, but how can we begin to have an imagination of what heaven will be like? And so some of the things that we've talked about that you can expect for sure, if you are a follower of Jesus, that moment that you die on this earth, you will feel more alive, more real, more living than you have ever felt before in your entire life. You will not feel less, you will feel more in that very moment that you die. You'll be greeted by people that you've known and loved, people that have helped you to follow Jesus in your life. You'll experience the indescribable beauty of heaven. Remember, a number of the stories have just talked about the grass, just the grass. How they can't even find the words to describe how amazing the grass is in heaven, let alone everything else. So we'll hear a little bit more of that today. And you'll be awestruck by the highlight of heaven, what everybody says, even if they don't know who he is, even if they don't know where they are, the highlight of heaven is that man of brilliant light, Jesus. And you'll experience a review of your life, which might sound a little scary. And I want to show you our first video this morning. It's two people that, if you've been here, you will have already met on screen. Howard Storm was the atheist college professor who had a medical emergency in France many years ago and initially had a hellish experience and then cried out to Jesus and experienced this review of his life. And the second is Dr. Mary Neal, who we've tracked with all the way through this series, who is a spinal surgeon, I think, and her kayak was trapped under a waterfall for 30 minutes. And so have a look what both these guys, Howard and Mary, say about their experience of their life review.
Howard, tell us about this life review that you had.
There was a number of angels, I call them angels, who had been recording my entire life, all my life, and Jesus wanted them to play out in chronological order the scenes of my life. And the entire emphasis was on my interaction with other people, of course, initially starting out with my mother and father and my sisters and then, you know, school and friends and
so you saw it or you
We saw it,
experienced
we felt
it?
It, we experienced it. It was really interesting because it was the whole emphasis was on people and not on things. Matter of fact, there were some instances where I had won promotions, honors, awards, and they skipped them. And Jesus, I said to Jesus, you're skipping the most important thing in my life. This is what I live for, to get this award, Kentucky Artist of the Year. Big banquet in my honor and a big cash prize and everything. And he said, that's not what we're here for you to see. That's not important. What I want you to see is how you treated the students. So what I learned in my life review was that the relationship with my father, I had participated in the breakdown of that relationship as much as he did. He was not a good father to me, and I resented it, and I was angry at him, so I did everything I could subconsciously and sometimes consciously to be as rebellious and as cold-hearted towards him as possible, which only aggravated him more and made him more of a hostile father. So the things that I had seen in my life that where I was the victim and everybody else was the bad guy, I came to find out it was a two-way street. We were both playing this game. As my life progressed from my adolescence into my adulthood, I saw myself turning completely away from God, church, all that, and becoming a person who decided that life was all about the biggest, baddest bear in the woods wins. And now I began to experience Jesus and the angels' literal pain
What do you mean?
Emotional pain with watching scenes in my life. And like, here's the nicest, kindest, most loving being I've ever met, who I realize is my Lord, my Savior, even my Creator, holding me and supporting me, trying to give me more understanding of my life. And it was figuratively, not literally, like I was like stabbing him in the heart as we're watching this stuff. And the last thing I wanted to do was to hurt him. And I don't want to hurt him to this day. Jesus is a very feeling man. God is a very feeling creator.
What were you seeing played out?
I saw scenes where my sister was in bed crying, and I got up in the middle of the night and went in and put my arms around her and hugged her. And Jesus and the angels were so filled with joy that I had been willing to do that, to try and, help her a little bit in her grief. But those were rare, the scenes of my indifference. Just seeing people as objects in order to maneuver around through, or, you know, to shift to further my goals and my ambitions.
We did go through a life review, and it was nothing like I would have imagined.
What was the life review like?
My life was laid bare for all its good and bad. And one of the things we did was look at many, many, many events throughout my life that I would have otherwise called terrible or horrible or sad or bad or tragic. And instead of looking at an event in isolation or looking at how it impacted me and my little world, I had the most remarkable experience of seeing the ripple effects of the event when seen 25, 30, 35 times removed.
According to near-death experience researchers who talk to hundreds, even thousands of people who have very similar experiences to the two that we heard, the life review that they have in the presence of God is the most dramatic, life-changing thing about their experience. Because it clarifies what really matters to God and what is really important in our lives, that every little action has a reverberation person to person out and even down through generations. You know, Jesus told us so clearly, summing up from the Old Testament what God had already said, the first and the greatest commandment, to love God by putting Him first and giving ourselves back to Him and for His purposes. And the second, to love those around us. God said this all the way back in the Old Testament. Jesus clarified it and summed it all up and said, these are the two most important things, love God and love other people. He told us this, but we still think there are more important things. We still think there are more important things to do with our life than to love God and love other people. But there aren't. All the other things that we're trying to do to prove ourselves to the world or to ourselves are not important to God. You have gifts to use, resources to steward, responsibilities, but what will matter is how and why you did all of those things, not so much what exactly you did. Was it to love God and to love others, or was it for yourself, for your own benefit, to glorify yourself? So what is this life review that people have experienced? Well, it's not the judgment based on their life that you might have read about in the Bible. There are two judgments that are talked about in the Bible, but both happen after the history of the earth is finished. We're going to talk about those in just a couple of minutes. But this life review that these two and others have experienced, what do we find in the Bible about that idea? About seeing what happened in our life and seeing the reverberations and seeing what God thinks of what we did with our life. Well, imagine that kind of day when you can look back almost like on a video screen, or they talk about it in the NDEs as like a panoramic experience, just seeing your whole life and seeing all of those ripple effects, which makes it so clear that Jesus was telling the truth in Matthew chapter 10 when he said, "For the time is coming when everything that is covered will be revealed, and all that is secret will be made known to all." Which might kind of strike fear in your heart, But also it's the other things, like Howard was talking about on the video, about just that one time in the middle of the night when he heard his sister crying and went in and comforted her, that probably no one else ever knew about. But God saw it. God remembered it. God celebrated it. One of these NDE researchers, Pin van Lommel, notes that the life review is usually experienced in the presence of the light or a being of light. So this is a non-Christian researcher saying these people see light or a being of light. That's where the life review normally happens. And during a panoramic life review, people experience not just their every action or their word, but also every thought from their life. And they experience the effects of their thoughts, words, and actions on other people. People can talk for hours or even days about their life review, even though their cardiac arrest, for example, lasted only a couple of minutes. They experienced a life review for hours. And regardless of cultural or religious upbringing, and as I said a few weeks ago, this is one of the most amazing things to me about the research. Regardless of your cultural or your religious upbringing, people see the same thing. Statistically, not every single person, but statistically, people see the same thing. They see this being of light, even if they don't know that it's Jesus. Even non-Western, non-Christian near-death experiences. One of the other researchers, Steve Miller, says, in my non-Western sample, I saw no significant difference in life reviews compared to Western life reviews. So different people describe it differently. Some would say it was like a movie of myself and of my entire life. Another would say it was like a panoramic review of my life. Another one said it was like a PowerPoint presentation. That'd be boring. They probably had that years ago when PowerPoint was new and exciting. But all of them were shocked to experience not only this living three-dimensional observation of their lives, but even their secret thoughts and motives, which aligns with what the Bible predicts will happen. This is from 1 Corinthians 4, the Apostle Paul saying, so don't make judgments about anyone ahead of time. Don't go around judging each other before the Lord returns. For he, Jesus, will bring our darkest secrets to light and will reveal our private motives, and then God will give to each one whatever praise is due. And then Jesus said in one of his parables in Luke 14, then he turned to his host when he was there having a meal, and he says, when you put on a luncheon or a banquet, he said, don't invite your friends, your brothers, your relatives, and rich neighbors, for they will invite you back. They'll return the favor. And that will be your only reward. Instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and then, at the resurrection of the righteous, when the history of earth is wrapped up, God will reward you for inviting those who could not repay you. Not everyone can succeed in the eyes of the world. Most of us will not be rich or famous or powerful, but all of that worldly glory is going to pass away anyway when we die. But every single one of us can succeed. Every single one of us can succeed in what God put us here to do, because he looks at our heart and our motives most. And every single one of us can succeed at that. The message is clear: to live now, live today for what really matters. Because we can please God, we can succeed with faith and sincerity, seeking him and loving other people. So one of the other researchers, again, not a Christian guy, says that these near-death experiences generally noted that they were the ones who judged themselves. And so some use this observation to declare, well, there's no judgment ever. We only judge ourselves. God is not judging us. But that's not entirely right. So from what we hear of the stories, people experience their life review, but also experience their reaction that Jesus and the angels have. But Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, he says, a good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart, and an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. And I tell you this, you must give an account on judgment day for every idle word you speak, for everything you say, everything you do. The words you say will either acquit you or condemn you. Your words will either prove you faithful to God or condemn you as unfaithful to God. So at the end of time, when Jesus returns, there will be two judgments that we find in the Bible. The first determines, very simply, whether we've accepted Jesus or whether we've rejected Jesus. But the second is to reward us for how we've lived, all of those words, all of those thoughts, all of those actions. So the first one we call the Great White Throne Judgment, to differentiate it from the other one, because in Revelation chapter 20, the Apostle John saw this. He says, I saw a great white throne. Great White Throne Judgment. I saw a great white throne and the one sitting on it. The earth and sky fled from his presence, but they found no place to hide. I saw the dead, both great and small, standing before God's throne, and the books were opened, including the book of life. And the dead were judged according to what they had done, as recorded in the books. The sea gave up its dead, which was a big deal in those days. For when John was experiencing this and writing it, for people who would die at sea and bodies were lost. The sea gave up its dead, and death and the grave gave up their dead, and all were judged according to their deeds, according to their life. Most people today would like to dismiss the idea of judgment because it's not really a popular idea. But it has been a common idea throughout history, and it's uncanny how many of these near-death experiences refer to books in heaven. Even the research done into 500 Indians, Hindus, who had near-death experiences, the number of them that saw this man of bright light with a book of accounts. Same thing that the Christians see in America or wherever else, but the Hindus see the same thing and then say, well, that must be karma. It must be, you know, kind of recording the good and the bad and how karma works and loops around, which is just simply an interpretation. But as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, you can find predictions of this written thousands of years ago in the Bible of that very same thing, the white-robed man with a book of accounts. What those who have experienced a life review realize is that God's love and compassion for them is not based on their good or their bad life. It's unconditional. And so even those who don't know Jesus still experience his love and compassion when they meet him. But what the judgment will be about, what God's love and compassion is based on, is whether people have received the free gift of Jesus. And so possibly a familiar passage for you from Ephesians chapter 2 says that God saved you by his grace, by his gift, when you believed. And so you can't take credit for this. It's a gift from God. Salvation, receiving Jesus, being assured of heaven, your name in that book of accounts, the book of life, that is not a reward for the good things that we've done. So none of us can boast about it. For we are God's masterpiece. He created us brand new in Christ Jesus so we can do the good things he planned for us long ago. Receive Jesus, be assured of heaven, and then also do the good things which we will be judged on, and we'll get to that in just a moment. God wants us to have confidence that we will never be cast away from his presence. We are safe, secure, locked in with Christ if we've accepted him. And these near-death experiences confirm what the Bible has already said, that there are books in heaven, including the book of life, that has our names in it, everyone's name in it, when they've accepted Jesus. And so we don't have to live with fear of that judgment day or fear of condemnation from God, because the great white throne judgment, when God sits on his throne and opens those books of accounts, is based on simply whether you have accepted Jesus, simply how you've responded to his love for you. But that doesn't mean that the rest of your life doesn't matter. And so the second judgment we find, they call the Bema Seat Judgment. And Bema is the Greek word for judged or judgment, which is in the verse on the screen there. So for we must all stand before Christ to be judged, Bema. We will each receive whatever we deserve for the good or evil we've done in this earthly body. Which the word Bema is not a word just for the Bible. That word is from the ancient Olympic Games, where the judge would sit to reward the finalists in the running race or the wrestling or whatever they were doing, to award the gold medalist and the silver medalist. They would sit in this place. That was the word that was used to describe what the judges would do in the ancient Olympic Games. And so in that same way, God will reward every faithful act, deed, motives. That's what will happen in that Bema Seat Judgment. We don't earn God's love or acceptance. We receive that because of Jesus. But all of these things that we do in this life determine those rewards in our experience of heaven. The Bema Seat is like a huge Oscars celebration, red carpet, awards for all of God's children right across human history. The best kind of reward ceremony ever to recognize and reward every single person for every single thing that they've done. In Isaiah 62, the prophet saw this coming. And he said, look, your Savior is coming, see? He brings his reward with him as he comes. And then Jesus said in Matthew 16, for the Son of Man, speaking of himself coming back, will come with his angels in the glory of his Father and will judge all people according to their deeds. Imagine that day. And live today for the things that God rewards. Imagine that day when you enter the most beautiful city imaginable. I want to read to you some of the parts of Revelation chapter 21 as the Apostle John had this vision of heaven. And just let your imagination run wild as you hear him try to explain it. This is not a perfect account of what heaven is like. This is John seeing something and trying to find the words to make sense of it and describe it. Let your imagination run wild. As John says, this angel took me in the spirit to a great high mountain. And he showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God and sparkled like a precious stone, like jasper, as clear as crystal. The city wall was broad and high, with 12 gates guarded by 12 angels, and the names of the 12 tribes of Israel were written on the gates. The wall was made of jasper, and the city was pure gold, as clear as glass. The wall of the city was built on foundation stones inlaid with 12 precious stones. The 12 gates were made of pearls, each gate from a single pearl. And the main street was pure gold, as clear as glass. I saw no temple in the city, which he was looking for. He expected it to be there. For the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb, Jesus, are its temple. And the city has no need of sun or moon, for the glory of God illuminates the city, and the Lamb, Jesus, is its light. The nations will walk in its light. The kings of the world will enter the city in all of their glory. Its gates will never be closed at the end of day, because there is no night there. And all the nations will bring their glory and honor into the city. Nothing evil, nothing bad, nothing unsettling, nothing terrible will ever be allowed to enter. And nor anyone who practices shameful idolatry and dishonesty, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. My imagination used to be limited to probably something from the 80s, you know, like ancient Greek or maybe even semi-modern Greek kind of architecture, you know, gaudy golden gates, bright yellow, you know, big pearl on top. That's how it would look. Not really that exciting. Or like streets that were actual gold, too bright to look at. Again, bright yellow brick road kind of idea. Not that exciting. But when you let your imagination run wild and you hear what these near-death experiences describe as they try to put it into words, it just opens up so many more possibilities of amazing, amazing things to see and experience. So I want to show you our very last video for the series. There's one more that your discussion group leader will have, a live interview with a psychotherapist writing about the validity of near-death experiences, writing about how from her perspective as a psychotherapist they line up. But I want to show you the very last video as a collection of familiar characters. Airline pilot, pastor, surgeon, all describe this same city that John did, but as if witnesses of a car accident from different corners see different things, they describe different aspects of it. In this video, the audio does go funny in a few seconds near the end, but I've kept it in because you'll get the gist of it, but don't turn angrily at Dean because it's not his fault. But enjoy our very last video of near-death experiences and then we'll wrap up for this morning.
So in your book, you describe flying into, is it the New Jerusalem? What is it? And describe the beauty and what you saw.
I get this incredible airborne view, a descending, slowing down airborne view of the city of gold. And it's city. It's a city that's walled. Over the city were majestic mountains that were as gorgeous as any that could be ever seen. However, they did not look that different than Earth. I wasn't disappointed by that. I'm not saying that. I noticed snow. So think about that. Snow. What does that mean? Atmosphere? Temperature? Snow? What's that all about? I noticed flying birds later. What does that mean? These are the kind of questions I ask.
Yeah.
Okay, if a bird is to fly, it can't be a vacuum. I'm hearing music. What does that mean? Music can't transfer in a vacuum. It has to be in an atmosphere. There's atmosphere here in heaven. Oh, what does that mean?
You're flying, but you don't have wings.
Right. I'm floating is what I would call it. I'm floating and coming in, descending. And finally, I come down and touch ground level for a while. And I'm hovering between 40 feet-ish and down. But I recognize later, oh, there was gravity there. There is gravity. There is atmosphere. There's water. There are animals. Inside the city, I could see, we'll start from foreground to back, if you like. I could see the townships, as I called them, homes that people lived in, homes that were likely to be created for the people of heaven. Interestingly enough, they struck me by not so much the size as the architecture. I know nothing about architecture at all. I still don't. But I recognize that there was something divine about the architecture of the buildings. There were small, what we would call like condos here. There were single family residences that we would call here. There were huge palaces. And I could see that, but...
And this is all inside the wall?
On the other side of the wall. I saw none of this.
And how big is this city? I mean, can you tell?
I could not tell, other than it was beyond the horizon both directions. There's countryside inside, so that it's gorgeous, beautiful, all of the adjectives times 1,000.
So coming up to this dome structure, maybe, was it a city? Could you tell? Was there something inside? Well, was there an entrance into it?
There was an entrance. It was a big arched entrance and a wide threshold.
What did that look like, that entrance?
Well, similarly, it was almost like the old Roman block arches. But again, these blocks were seemingly solid looking, but not. They were really woven together with love, which is nonsensical. But
you were aware of a structure,
yes,
an arch.
It seemed structural to me.
And was there, the gate of heaven or a
it
gate?
It wasn't, there wasn't a gate.
When
it was
gate.
Just an archway.
Yeah.
And I would say again that if I had any inclination that I was coming back, I would have tried to make more mental notes because many of the questions are the same questions that I ask myself now. And I will say that I was able to see many, again, people, angels, spirits, I'm not sure, very busy. And I don't know what they were doing.
Inside the
archway. Inside. They were all very busy. I don't know what they were doing, but they were doing something and clearly doing God's work.
Well, the gate is quite large. The gate itself, the entrance is small. And the wall is very thick, but you can actually see through it. So I'm looking over these people, and I can see through it. And there appears to be this massive boulevard that really kind of bisects the city, and it is made of gold. But gold that is so pure, you can see through it. It's
what do you mean?
Well, you can actually see through the gold. It's gold, and it's visible and tangible, but it is pure. Now, we can't imagine that here because gold on earth is one of the densest metals we have. But in heaven, it's so pure, you can see through it. So you can see under it. You can see even the roots of trees and things like that. There are trees there. In fact, the tree of life is there. Mm-hmm. That we were not able to eat of here, we can eat of it there.
And you're looking through.
I'm looking at the tree. I'm looking at the gates. I'm looking through the gates. I'm looking down the street. There is a river that flows from this throne or this hill that's high and lifted up. And I know that's the river of life because we're told that it flows from the throne of God. So many of the things that we know and enjoy and love here are visible there as well. I would say this, and heaven's never going to be less than this. It's always going to be more.
Yeah.
So whatever you imagine here that is meaningful to you, the relationships, the beauty, and let's face it, there's some glorious places on earth, but there should be because God created it. This is His place. So heaven's not going to be less than that. It's going to be more than that. There are structures on both sides of the city. They look like mansions to me. I mean, they're glorious places for people to dwell. So it's just an incredibly awesome, overwhelming, bustling place. It's not a boring place. There aren't any cherubs sitting around on clouds playing harps. This is an active, exciting, healing place.
And at this magnificent gate, a very large wall, a very thick wall, there's a gate, and it looks like the inside of an oyster. It's a gate made of pearl, really quite dazzling, very brilliant, very beautiful. It almost looks like it's pulsating with life, except I know it's the light reflecting off the gate that makes it look that way.
The arch and the tunnel was the same substance. It was not stone, but it was in the stone.
But what was the substance?
The substance was pearl. It looked like liquefied pearl. And when the light from the throne room, that's the only light that there is, emanated through, it just bounces off the pearl. There's no shadows, and there's no darkness at all, and there's no need for unnatural or artificial light, and it is a sight to behold, and welcomed me to go through it, but I couldn't go through it at that time.
Whatever you can imagine on earth, it's going to be better than that. Whatever the best thing is that you've ever experienced on earth, it's going to be better than that. And one day, to those who are faithful, who accepted Jesus and followed Him, will hear His words say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, your life here on earth. Now I'll give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together." In heaven, we will work, good work. We'll have projects, exciting projects, have houses, property. Some will govern cities or nations. Some will tend to animals. And there's nothing in the Bible that would suggest that animals, pets, are not in heaven. You know, dogs for sure. Cats, I don't know, but we could look forward to that. Animals are God's creatures for us to enjoy on earth, and so why not to enjoy forever? We'll explore nature's wonders. There will be culture and dance, art and music like you've never heard. And Jesus said it will be life, life abundant. Life as we know, but so much more. And to share in God's glory, to be in His presence, will be the greatest thing of all. Life in heaven will have purpose and meaning and fulfillment. It'll be more fulfilling and better than anything you've experienced in this life. But how you live this life does matter. Treating Jesus or treating heaven like an insurance policy that, okay, I've accepted Him and now I can do whatever I want with my life is a waste. Jesus said that what we do here will be judged in heaven and will be rewarded accordingly. And we don't really know what that means. It's kind of hard to understand because you go, well, if we're in heaven, isn't that enough? I don't really understand, except for this passage from the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. He says, just before what's on the screen, he says that we've laid a foundation as the followers of Jesus. This is who Jesus is. But now you, anyone who builds on that foundation, so you accept Jesus and then you live your life, you do ministry, you build on that foundation, you may use a variety of materials. He's using a building analogy: gold, silver, jewels, wood, hay, or straw, like the three little pigs. But on the judgment day, fire will reveal what kind of work each builder has done. Not like, forest fire that is dangerous, purifying fire. Fire will reveal what kind of work each builder has done. The fire will show if a person's work has any value, if your life has any value. If the work survives, that builder will receive a reward. But if the work is burned up, the builder will suffer great loss. The builder will be saved, but like someone barely escaping through a wall of flames. I don't quite know what that means, enough to say that how we live this life matters. To be the kind of builder that receives a reward rather than the kind of builder who will be saved like someone barely escaping through a wall of flames. If we really knew, if we really got, if we really had an imagination of what heaven will be like, it would change everything about the way that we live. And so I wonder, as we finish this series, I just want to give you a few categories to reflect on, and then we're going to draw it all to a close. I wonder what's happened for you over the last 6 weeks as you've tracked with us through this series. I wonder about your imagination, if you have a greater imagination of what heaven will be like. I wonder about your fears, if you're more at peace with your own death, whenever it comes. If you're less concerned with your body now and your outward appearance now, knowing that you're going to have an even better body, look even more amazing than you do today in heaven. And your relationships, are you more excited now to be reunited with friends and family, those who have known Jesus and have gone ahead of you? Are you more invested in relationships now, knowing that you can take people with you? You can take the depth of relationships with you into eternity. And are you more passionate, more bold, more free about sharing your faith with others so that they too can know Jesus and have the confidence and the assurance that you have? I wonder about your motivations. Are you less concerned about the worries and the stresses of life, knowing that they pale in significance, they pale into insignificance compared to the life to come? Your greatest struggle today pales in significance compared to how amazing the life to come is going to be. Are you checking your motivations, why you're doing things, more than the outcomes of what you do? And your identity, your belonging to Jesus. Are you walking more closely with him, anticipating the little glimpses that you get, anticipating the joy and the intimacy and the fulfillment of life with Jesus in heaven? And again, your identity, like I just said with motivations, recognizing that even just within yourself, your greatest struggle today, your greatest insecurity today, your greatest dislike about yourself today pales into insignificance compared to how great heaven will be. Even how great you will feel and you will be and you will experience in heaven. You'll find around the seats and around the floors this morning bits of paper that look like this, which may or may not have been scribbled on by the kids that are sitting near you. As we finish this morning, the band's going to come on back up. I'm going to sing a final song. We're going to finish our service and have morning tea. But we would love to hear from you if this series has made an impact on you. And the offering bags are going to be passed around in a couple of minutes while we sing this song. And if any of these things apply to you, we'd love for you to tick that and we can follow up with you. So if you have accepted Jesus for the first time in this series, or even that you're doing it right now as I'm speaking, it's all starting to click, and you pray and you do it, I'd love for you to tick that box and fill in your details, and we'll help you to grow in your newfound faith. If you want to be baptized, if you've never been baptized before, you've never chosen to be baptized before, we'd love to arrange that for you. Again, tick the box, write your details, and you can put it in those bags as they come around. If you need prayer, for anything, heaven related or otherwise, again, tick the box and our prayer team will pray for you. And if you just have a story to share, something that's happened in this series or something that's happened in your life, we love to hear stories of God at work. And so we'd love to hear your story. If you need more time to write, just hang on to it and you can put it in one of the giving boxes. There's three of them around the room before you leave this morning. But team with the bags, let's get into the song, and maybe after the first verse or something, if you're able to pass those bags around as we're ready. And when you're ready to stand and sing, let's sing and finish our service this morning. Thanks.
Thanks.